You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The League of Wisconsin Municipalities is working to help towns and villages do their job right now, and that includes helping small communities navigate the COVID-19 pandemic. Rural and small-town communities seem like a safe haven from the novel coronavirus, but testing in rural areas could also be more limited. How is your town or village pulling together right now? Did you see an influx of city dwellers come to their cabins? How do you think the nation should handle the pandemic in rural areas? We're at 800-642-1234. Zach Vruwink is the mayor of Wisconsin Rapids. He's also president of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. Zach, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, you talk with town and village leaders almost every day in a conference call that you call a virtual roundtable. What are the main things that small communities are talking about, and what are you exchanging information on?
Sure. Well, the questions in the conversation really are far wide in reach. Local governments are on the front lines of this pandemic. We're communicating with our business leaders on a daily basis. We're hearing from community organizations who might be struggling or who are trying to stay open to continue to serve vulnerable populations. On the call specifically, the election is the top conversation. I think it's important to remind folks that it takes nearly 30,000 people to run our local elections here in Wisconsin. And among them, there's over 3,000 local elected officials who are currently trying to access the statewide voter registration system, which, if you can imagine, the bottleneck on our tech infrastructure, particularly in those rural communities where the internet connection and broadband is not as great as it is in places like Wisconsin Rapids. We're trying to respond to those concerns on a regular basis.
Are there concerns that precincts will be closed and you'll have to move voting to other locations?
Some of that has already occurred. There were some contingency plans put in place when the Wisconsin Elections Commission met just over a week ago, allowing clerks to make modifications and adapt some of the locations of polling places. I think it's also important to note that there's nearly 3,000 polling places in Wisconsin available to voters in the general election. So you can imagine the sheer volume of poll workers that are required to staff those locations and the precautions that they need to take, whether it's simply getting hand sanitizer and some of the supply backups as it relates to getting those things to the election sites.
So at this point, does the League support continuing the April 7th election, or would you recommend delaying it?
Great question. Over the weekend, there was a letter circulating among local officials and city clerks and mayors indicating that the state and the legislature and the governor should come together to talk about the sheer crisis that might be on our hands as it relates to people coming to go vote and exercising that right in person, absentee, as is occurring in cities across the state right now, cities and villages and counties and towns where people are trying to vote early. Just in the last 2 days, there were over 320 in-person absentee voters in Wisconsin Rapids, and that's certainly a concern when you factor the rules around mass gathering and the limitations of having no more than 10 people in a single gathering space at a given time. So the letter really addressed concerns that we all had, that should we get an unprecedented amount of in-person absentee, we may be in violation. Certainly local government has some exemptions afforded to us, but there's no question that folks that might be coming to vote in person have concerns about coming into contact with someone that is carrying the virus. So I think that's a concern. The other piece is the amount of absentee ballot requests that municipal clerks are receiving. In Wisconsin Rapids, normally we receive about 400 to 500 absentee ballot requests that we turn around and put in the mail for our residents to vote. Already this election, we've responded to 1,400. So over four times the amount of absentee ballots have been requested of our municipal clerk. And I know clerks around the state, particularly those in the rural communities, where they're the one-man band, so to speak, in trying to address the folks that are trying to take seriously their right and their ability to vote.
We're checking in on how rural Wisconsin communities are responding to the pandemic. Zach Vruwink is mayor of Wisconsin Rapids. He's also president of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. You can join in. Have you gotten direction on how to handle this order from your town or village leadership on staying at home? Can your town's health care system scale up? How do you manage voting in your community and how to get through the April 7th election. Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So looking more closely at the stay-at-home order issued yesterday for everyone not classified as essential, how are our Main Street businesses doing? Will they get through this?
That's a great question. I know it was a priority of mine, and certainly has been discussed on the league calls, that local officials like myself are communicating early and often. Over 2 weeks ago, we held calls with our local businesses and individuals in our community that might be concerned. And I can tell you, just like local government, these small businesses are being creative in ways that we've never seen before, that they're looking at ways to collaborate and to continue to afford their operations through selling gift certificates online and in places that they hadn't done before. But without question, there is going to be an insurmountable impact that some of these businesses will be faced. I know some of the state's business lobby, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, has referenced the fact that many of these businesses may face permanent closure and not reopening. But I can say that there's been an element of creativity, and our Chamber of Commerce has been a great partner for us as well. And I know that's occurred in a lot of communities around the state as they've tried to support businesses and ensure really lines of communication are open as it relates to state and federal resources that might be coming their way in order for them to afford their overhead during this time where they may have had closure.
Our city and village government staff, are they classified as essential employees right now?
By and large, the most part are. Certainly our election workers and city clerks and those folks. But we're also finding ways to be creative and help them out because we've had issues with poll workers who are rightfully so concerned about the public health concerns about working in an election. We've lost two poll workers a day in some cases in our city. And so we've identified library employees when our library closed a little over a week ago to say might they be interested in getting trained on working in election poll place or working early voting in-person absentee. And so by and large, our staff are deemed essential. Certainly, we provide, many of us provide around-the-clock police and fire and paramedic services. So by and large, everyone will be working. But now with the stay-at-home order yesterday, for example, in the city of Wisconsin Rapids, we have been planning for that occurrence and have now working through accommodations to allow some folks to work from home that otherwise would not have that opportunity. And the same goes for some staggered scheduling. But Wisconsin Rapids is fortunate in that we have a size of staff that we can offer some of these flexibilities. In a lot of places, there is no backup to the municipal clerk. If there's a deputy clerk, if both of those individuals come down ill, there isn't anybody else to back them up. And I would say we've got some instances of that in Wisconsin Rapids. However, we've tried to do as much cross-training in a short period of time to deem some of those essential workers safe to keep them so they've got staggered scheduling and such.
And it sounds like you also have more robust high-speed internet access for employees who can work remotely.
We are very fortunate at Wisconsin Rapids to have a local internet service provider and competition from another provider that do provide fiber to the home. So we've got 100 meg symmetrical internet to residential properties if they're on the local internet service provider. And I know that others have amped up their speed on a complimentary basis during this difficult time. So it's been really neat to see how they've been able to step in and provide relief for those of us that are contending with really challenged video conference systems at this time.
We're talking about how rural areas are navigating the pandemic with Zach Vruwink. He's mayor of Wisconsin Rapids, president of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. Have you received direction on how to handle the stay-at-home order from your city or village leadership? Do you have a manufacturer in your community that has just reduced hours or closed? How is your town dealing with this? How are neighbors helping each other, especially the elderly? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll talk more in a moment with Zach Vruwink here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're finding out how small Wisconsin towns and villages are dealing with a pandemic. Rural areas could see their limited public health infrastructure stretched thin. Residents are older. There are fewer physicians to go around. And struggling hospitals may not be able to handle an influx of patients. So do you live in a town or village? What precautions and preparations is your community making? Do you have broadband? If you're a rural physician, how are you responding to this health crisis? Join in right now, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Zach Brewink is president of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. He's mayor of Wisconsin Rapids, and he stays with us. So, Mayor, Wisconsin is full of smaller communities and an elderly population that permeates many parts of our rural communities here. How are you ensuring that the elderly in villages and small towns are going to be okay?
That's a great question. We've been working closely with the Aging and Disability Resource Centers of Central Wisconsin, and I know in other parts of the state the same applies, to ensure that home-delivered meals continue, to make sure that the residents and the vulnerable populations in our communities are being fed with nutritious meals. I know in Wisconsin Rapids we've had to close our congregate meal sites to the disappointment of many, but we were able to adapt and continue to take requests to meet those individuals at their homes. Other things I would say is to encourage people to get outdoors, while they're practicing social distancing of being no less than 6 foot from another individual, that places like Wisconsin Rapids and other communities have great trails, and in our case, a great river running through the center of our city. And it's more important now than ever to focus on mental and emotional well-being while also being safe and not congregating in public. So those are ways that we're encouraging our residents to continue to stay well. We've also engaged in making phone calls. I know our local Masonic Lodge has also started to reach out and make phone calls to some of their members who might be qualified and classified as a vulnerable population. So it's been really neat to see how many community organizations have adapted to the current times to check on folks in these communities, because they are our friends and neighbors. And so many of us know these folks well, and they appreciate the opportunity to be checked in on.
Well, you've been talking about volunteers at the polls. The state really relies on volunteers for ambulance and firefighting services in rural areas. Are there concerns with the capacity of these volunteers during this time?
Without question, even for career fire departments like Wisconsin Rapids, we've been trying to identify ways to stagger shifts and ensure those folks don't come into close contact with each other. Should there be a situation where we have members that have to self-quarantine or isolate, we've engaged mutual aid, but we can't mutual aid ourselves out of this, right? We've got to be smart and be nimble and be ahead of things, particularly to ensure that we've got adequate supplies of PPE. I know that's been an issue in many cities around the state, that while we've got a supply for this week or for maybe for next week, but beyond that, there are major questions about whether the state and federal government would be able to backfill the needs of our public safety folks, not to mention the hospital systems that are also reliant on many of these supplies to be available.
Talking with the president of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, Zach Brewink is with us, the mayor of Wisconsin Rapids. Let's take a call now. Maxine is joining us from the Village of Wales. Hi, Maxine.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm inquiring about what options cities, counties have for holding public meetings, such as board meetings, planning commission meetings, so the public isn't exposed and the board members aren't exposed.
Yeah, Maxine, the line is a little bit bad there, and I want to reiterate, Maxine wants to know how communities go on holding public meetings and planning commission meetings when they can't meet face-to-face. Mayor?
It's a great question. Many of us have instituted a state of emergency by declaration. I did so 2 weeks ago, and those powers provide for the opportunity for the chief elected official to act in matters of great importance where a public meeting may not otherwise be able to be scheduled. That doesn't preclude it still requires the municipal governing body to meet and to take up that order at some point in the future. We did so right before we started closing our access to City Hall, and I know a lot of cities and villages were faced with that decision in the last week or two. And basically, through declaration and through working with the league, we've been able to make accommodations to meet remotely and to meet electronically. provided that there's still a component of public viewing, which might be via teleconference. It might be through a video if possible. But that's a great question. In Wisconsin Rapids, and I believe in most municipalities, governing body meetings have been postponed or suspended until that governing body can meet on an emergency order.
Are there plans in place for how hospitals and clinics will divert patients in smaller rural areas if hospitals in rural parts of the state do get overloaded? What does that look like?
Without question, there will be there's a likelihood or probability of smaller community hospitals being overwhelmed. I know it's been great to see the hospital systems in the Wisconsin Rapids and Central Wisconsin area come together to talk about, while they may be competitors on one hand, they are serving our community collectively on the other. And so many of them have instituted surge and pandemic level responses. I know they're working with the Wood County Health Department in our case, or county health around the state, to identify what that next level of need and resource might be. If there is a mass quarantine facility, I know that's been on the topic of our conversations lately. Where might that be, and how we might be able or might have to take in folks from outside our region simply because of capacity limitations?
Well, we just heard from Mark from Reedsburg, called in on a really bad line in a little bit of a rural area, wants to ask if parks are staying open. The DNR is keeping state parks open, but limiting access to buildings. Mayor, are city and other local parks staying open in rural areas?
Many of them not, either by order or by actual signing the park facilities themselves. I've seen reports, pictures, videos of various parks departments going and cordoning off those facilities so that way children and individuals are not congregating within them. But if cities have recreational trails, have hiking trails, we encourage those folks to continue to market, make those available as to an opportunity for folks to get outdoors, very much the same as the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources you just indicated is.
What do towns and villages need the most right now to continue to function to get through this?
I would say if folks have an ability to work the polls, to contact their municipal clerk. I know many of them are not offering additional training just because of the capacity and priority they have to place on absentee ballots in the mail. But there may be an opportunity for them just to come in and to help shuffle paper for them because it is really a trying time for our municipal clerks. I would say the other piece that that municipalities and local governments are looking for is the personal protective equipment, the PPE I referenced, whether it's N95 masks, gowns, gloves, those types of things. So many counties are coordinating equipment drives and donation drives for those. So contact the county health department or the municipality. Like I said, we may be fine today, but in a week or two, there may be a dire need for that critical type of supply.
Well, as president of the league and a mayor, I'm sure your days are really busy, crammed with a lot of calls. What are you working on today? What's your day like?
So this morning we're going to be meeting with staff remotely, telework on the telework piece we mentioned, to encourage folks to be teleworking where they can. We're also going to be continuing to talk with our city clerk here to address the concerns they might have about the volume of in-person absentee voting that's occurring at the city clerk's office. But we're also making sure that we're communicating with our residents. On a daily basis, we've been issuing either written or video briefings to our residents to encourage them to stay safe. And we're also planning for another call with our business community, knowing that, again, the resources that are becoming available through the state and federal government, to the extent that they might become eligible for those. But really trying to keep people calm, encourage them to stay home, and to not come into contact with other people that they may not otherwise. I know there's some guidance, it's an unofficial guidance right now, of not coming into more than five people in a day. And we can't stress those things enough for our residents, particularly our most vulnerable.
So as we start to wrap up here, if a local business that is the heartbeat of a community, a manufacturing plant, say, if that is shuttered right now and so many people in a small town are at home, out of work, what do you do?
We're faced with that right here in Wisconsin Rapids. We've got a large paper mill that employs nearly 1,000 people directly, and I know I've stayed in contact with their leadership on almost a daily basis because there's a lot of rumor sometimes. So I would encourage folks to prioritize fact over fear. But if there is a situation, to stay in touch with their local job center. I know the Wisconsin Unemployment Office line has been really hamstrung at this time with the volume of calls they've been receiving. But I would encourage those folks to contact their Chamber of Commerce as well, because some of those businesses have sought additional employees. We saw grocery stores. I think the Roundy's Kroger group, which has a store in Wisconsin Rapids, is looking for additional staff during this time as they continue to receive unprecedented visits and volume through their stores, whether maybe it's just cleaning. So I think there will be some other job opportunities that have come as a result of this, far and few between, of course, in rural communities. So we encourage them to stay in touch with their Chamber of Commerce and their plant manager, and don't hesitate to reach out to the mayor or the village official in your community. I think these folks are listening more now than ever. We're trying to prioritize the concerns.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Mayor Zach Vruwink, Mayor of Wisconsin Rapids, President of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, here with us on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. UW researchers are studying how the new coronavirus behaves in people in hopes of developing a treatment for COVID-19. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved new emergency protocols yesterday, allowing doctors across the country to begin using plasma donated by the coronavirus survivors to treat patients who are critically ill right now. So are you vulnerable and worried that a treatment won't come along fast enough? Do you want the government to streamline its approach to the approval process for new vaccines? What are some treatments you're learning about? We're at 800-642-1234. David Wahlberg is a health and medicine reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. David, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, it's good to be here.
So let's look specifically at the UW. What are researchers trying to look at in these strains of the coronavirus?
Yeah, well, there's a few different types of research going on campus. One lab is trying to develop a vaccine against the coronavirus in people. Other researchers are doing studies in animals like monkeys and possibly ferrets to see how the virus acts in different types of tissues and in what places of mammals it's most active in. And then other researchers are kind of doing real basic science where they're looking at the actual proteins from the new virus to see how it compares to other strains of coronavirus.
So it sounds like these scientists, they're on a fact-finding mission and kind of seeing what sticks right now.
Yeah. With those animal studies I was talking about, the plan is to inject some of the samples of the new virus into, for example, macaque monkeys. This is actually happening at a different institution, not UW, but UW people are involved in the study. And they're trying to look at things like, might the virus be sort of lurking in some types of tissue that wouldn't necessarily show up on tests. So, you know, potentially some test results that are negative could be a little bit misleading. That's one of many questions they're looking at.
We also saw a move yesterday by the Food and Drug Administration to do what's called convalescent plasma in hopes to, you know, put this blood into people who are ill. What are these transfusions?
Yeah, I believe the idea behind this is that people who have had this infection and recovered, they would have antibodies to help their immune systems fight it off. And so you can take blood or serum from those people and potentially use that as a treatment to other people who are infected. This has been done for other things. You know, in past decades, and it can be promising. The drawback is that it's hard to scale up. You need a fair amount of serum from people to treat just one person. So it can be a difficult thing to do on a mass scale.
All right. So when you're looking at the research at the UW, what was the timeline here? When did researchers begin looking at the coronavirus? And how are they plotting along in terms of their timeline?
Yeah, well, they started looking at this new strain, the pandemic strain of the virus, fairly quickly after it started circulating back late last year. Some labs have gotten basically proteins of the virus, but not the whole virus. And then others are working with samples from some of the initial patients, including the first patient that was known to have it in Wisconsin, which was a Dane County patient, late January, early February.
So are these samples, new samples coming to them regularly? Are they needing any new types of samples? Because perhaps this virus looks very different from person to person.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know exactly how many samples or sort of what the volume is of what they're able to acquire, but I know at least one of the labs indicated that they're looking at different sequencing in Wisconsin to see the different types of strains that are circulating and to see when there's sort of introductions of other kinds of strains. And so they're studying that variation to get a better estimate of how many people actually are infected in the state. Of course, the state health department has been releasing reports of confirmed cases each day, but most health officials believe the actual number of cases going on, not just here in Wisconsin, but anywhere, is much higher than the reported cases each day. So these researchers are trying to study the different sequences to get a better sense of what the total is.
Is that due to not enough tests available?
That is likely one factor, but for any disease, if you take seasonal flu, for example, every year there's a surveillance system set up for seasonal flu, and every year there's a certain fraction of patients that get tested for flu or report to their doctor's offices with flu-like symptoms, and those numbers are used to get a sense of how flu is spreading around the country, but they never get the total number of people who have flu each year. They have to rely on models to estimate the total because another factor is that some people have mild symptoms and so they never go to see a doctor or request a test. So those are all factors that are going on here too with the COVID-19 epidemic. But certainly the lack of testing, especially in the early days, is probably related to the undercount, too.
We're talking with David Wahlberg, a health and medicine reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal, looking at the pandemic. What do you want to know about COVID-19 and what researchers are studying? Have you or a loved one contracted the coronavirus? Have you had to navigate the healthcare system? We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. David, you were talking earlier about testing vaccines on monkeys. There was testing last month on mice. Do we have any indication how these lab animals are responding to this research, to what they are, being exposed to?
Yeah, so in terms of vaccine research, I'll mention a couple things. So there was a clinical trial that started a week or two ago in Seattle in people, and that's the vaccine that's sort of furthest along, and that's a federally sponsored trial. And I'm almost certain that there were animal studies that went on before that, leading up to that clinical trial in people. Then here on campus, there is a lab that's developing a vaccine candidate with the intention of testing it in people. But this candidate is very early on. He just started the work about a month ago. This particular researcher had developed a coronavirus vaccine in chickens. Coronaviruses can infect lots of different kinds of animals. And this can be difficult on chicken farms. So that candidate was geared to that use. But when the new virus became available in people, this researcher basically used the human sequence and his technique for the chicken coronavirus to create a vaccine candidate for humans. Because he's just starting out, he has to start at the initial level of testing, which is mice or mouse studies. Then if those are successful, he could try other kinds of animals and then perhaps eventually in people. And it's basically too early to have any results of his mouse studies yet.
So how did the trials get to people so quickly in Seattle?
Well, I believe what happened there, it was a very quick process, but I believe some of the animal studies had already gone on with that candidate because it was based on earlier research for vaccines against SARS and MERS. So there's lots of different coronaviruses, and SARS is one many people might remember was circulating in around 2002 and 3. And then MERS, another one, started about 6-7 years ago. And researchers were actively working on vaccines against both of those. And I believe what happened, well, I'm not exactly sure, is that some of that background work they had done for that was useful in this latest candidate to get this trial going a little quicker in people.
Yeah, so applying that research into what is happening now, do you see movement here to perhaps streamline the process of research and getting to trials more quickly into people? Or are we still moving through all of the different stages at about, you know, without the same provisions?
Yeah, I don't really know the answer to that, but okay. I would say I think the steps are still required to be taken. Whether the pace can be hurried a little bit, you know, that might be the case, that maybe it can be moved along a little bit quicker, but the same general steps have to be taken. Some of these medications that are being talked about, like chloroquine, and there's an experimental medication that showed some use against Ebola, and now they're looking at it for coronavirus. There is talk about, because they've been approved for, some of them have been approved for other uses, there is talk about allowing doctors to use those for coronavirus in a quicker fashion than is sometimes done.
David, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's great to be here as always.
David Wahlberg, health reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. Coming up, you've aligned to Senator Ron Johnson. The Trump administration and Congress reached this historic agreement early this morning on the massive economic stimulus. What do you want to share about your situation and the stimulus? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment to talk with Senator Johnson here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The White House and Senate leaders have agreed on unprecedented emergency legislation to rush sweeping aid to businesses, to workers, to healthcare systems that are slammed by the coronavirus. It would be the largest economic rescue measure in history. Roughly $2 trillion stimulus expected to be enacted within days. What do you want to know about it? Will it help you? Is it best for the country and Wisconsin right now? Or is it a misstep? We're at 800-642-1234. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson is here. Senator Johnson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Morning, Kate.
How do you feel about this deal that was announced this morning of this sweeping economic rescue package?
Well, I'm glad that we finally reached a deal. This is going to be far from perfect. There are elements that are absolutely needed, should have been passed sooner. We certainly need to help displaced workers. One of the reasons I voted against the first package is I knew that people were going to be unemployed, and there was no provision for really plussing up the state unemployment funds to take care of those individuals. Now that will occur with this measure. There will be needed relief for smaller businesses that can tap into forgivable loans to the extent that they're being used to keep people employed. There will be a very large stabilization fund, economic stabilization fund for larger corporations and the financial markets. We need to keep liquidity into the system, give a fair amount of authority to the U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve, because they'll need the flexibility to really address this. One thing that I think is missing is some measure of loan forbearance. I think that's we'll see what the full package is. Possibly the Economic Stabilization Fund will give the Fed the authority to do this. But it's one of the things I was trying to push internally is let's just take a 60 or 90 day holiday in terms of people making payments on their loans. This is an economic crisis that's nobody's fault. This isn't because somebody did something wrong. This is because we have a virus. So the goal right now is to just literally flood the markets with dollars so that businesses can survive. So when this all passes, they can succeed again. And those that are closed right now can open back up. So,
well, you mentioned
it's an unprecedented event and requires unprecedented measures.
You mentioned the central bank, and a big chunk of this money, billions of dollars, is going to the central bank. And economists say it'll be buying the corporate debt and stabilizing the financial markets. Is it too much borrowing at the moment in order to stabilize the economy?
No, because the economy needs to be stabilized. We can't let these markets fail, or we could put ourselves into long-term recession, depression. So this is a stabilization move. The good news about the way this is structured, these will be basically bridge loans to businesses that were viable before this began, and hopefully will be viable on the back end, and they'll be able to pay them back. Now, there's an awful lot of criticism against TARP back after 9/11.
The Troubled Asset Relief Program?
Right. It had to be done. Now, it's not the way I would have done it. I would have removed mark-to-market, and there are other things you could have done. Same way here. I would have structured this thing differently. I don't think I would have had as large a package at this point in time, but that's the nature of the beast when you have to compromise with both parties. But we have to do something large because we have to stabilize our economy. And literally, this is a government forced economic shutdown here, and so we need to provide the liquidity for our free market system here.
Talking with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, Republican representing Wisconsin, with your questions on COVID-19 and the economic stimulus, 800-642-1234. Senator, you've said we need to put the situation in perspective, and you had cautioned against shutting down businesses. Was it appropriate for Governor Evers to issue a stay-at-home order this week?
Well, when you really read through that order, It's far less onerous than I think people initially assume. So I'm supportive of what Governor Evers is doing. And I spoke to him yesterday, and he acknowledged that he really does view most Wisconsin businesses are essential. So what we need to do is really focus on the non-essential businesses where people gather, where there's a real risk of spreading the coronavirus. Other businesses have to remain open. We obviously need hospitals to remain open. That means all the businesses that supply and service hospitals have to stay open. Grocery stores have to stay open. So all the servicing businesses, food producers, also have to remain open. The economy is incredibly interrelated. The good news is most of these businesses can remain open. I come from manufacturing. The folks that were working on my shop floor, they're 50 to 100 feet apart. You can maintain the social distances, you can help mitigate the spread of this, and still keep a large part of our economy open.
Let's go to Mark now in Romance. Hi, Mark.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Senator. I've been very troubled and concerned by these calls from the White House to end the the social distancing and the shutdowns. He's talking about crowded churches on Easter, April 12th. I would like to know what scientific basis, research, background there is for ending what the shutdowns early. It makes no sense. There's plenty of science to explain why we need to do it. What is your and the White House scientific evidence for not doing these shutdowns?
Well, first of all, I think you're overstating the case. I'm not aware that there's an effort of just, you know, willy-nilly opening everything back up. Based on where we are in the spread at that point in time, decisions would be made about what businesses might potentially reopen versus those that should remain closed. So I'm completely supportive of keeping businesses shut down where people congregate and there's a real risk of spreading. And then, of course, providing the government support, because, again, this is forced shutdowns for those businesses to be able to stay viable and to provide those workers with financial support during this time period. So, again, I think everybody's going to be looking at the science, but there's so much that we don't know about this. You know, right now, we don't have the capability of testing, and that's been a real problem. But also, there's some real just roadblocks of getting the supplies and within our system providing those tests. But we're starting to test a lot of people. But, for example, there are estimates that maybe we are understating the number of cases by 10 to 11 fold. If you use those numbers and apply it to the current mortality rate, that would put the mortality rate of COVID-19 not that much higher than just normal seasonal flu, where 2 years ago we lost 61,000 people to flu-related illnesses. So I think it's important to put things in perspective, not social cancel, not engage in social shaming, but let's take a look at all the information and let's consider the cost of what policy actions are in a very thoughtful manner. This is no time
Senator,
for no time for political attack.
Senator, the average age of your colleagues in the Senate is about 62 years old. Your colleague, Senator Rand Paul, tested positive. It spread. Are you concerned about you and your colleagues and their safety? Can you still work in Congress?
First of all, I'm concerned about every American. Sure. But at the same time, we do need to provide this financial package. I would have, quite honestly, changed the rules where we could have called in our votes on a temporary basis. That is not the decision leadership made. But the good news is Washington, D.C., maybe not good news, but Washington, D.C. is pretty much a ghost town. All of my staff is working from home. They're working, but they're using technology. We don't linger in the Senate when we take a vote. We walk in, we give a thumbs up, thumbs down, and then put some Purell on our hands. So, you know, people are taking this very seriously, as they should, practicing those basic social distancing strategies and personal hygiene. And hopefully nobody gets seriously ill here. But again, things do have to carry on. We can't completely shut down society because people have to eat. We need medical, you know, again, we have to have a functioning economy, but we can do it. And I think we can do it smartly.
Senator Johnson, thank you for joining us.
Have a great day.
You too. Ron Johnson is a Republican representing Wisconsin in the U.S. Senate. Just ahead, the editor of the NPR podcast, The Indicator, from Planet Money, Patty Hirsch, joins us to explain the pandemic and its effect on banks, the markets, unemployment, your situation. You can join in 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.